Hello and welcome to another scintillating edition of our podcast, Offside Musings. I'm delighted to welcome you on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyawa. In today's episode, we're going to be looking at the... I'm going to drag it out a little bit until I find a word. Okay. So, in today's episode, we're going to be looking at the inauguration of Charles Chukwuma Soludo as the governor of Anambra State. That inauguration is scheduled to take place in a couple of days, actually, March 17, 2022. We're going to be looking at what Soludo's inauguration and governance would mean both for Anambra State as well as the broader Nigerian collectivity. Soludo ran an extraordinary campaign in mobilizing the people of Anambra State to support his candidacy when he was the governorship candidate of the All Progressives Grand Alliance, APGA. And he defeated a field that included Valentine Ozibo, who actually gave a good account of himself, and Andy Oba, who was a rather disastrous candidate on the campaign stumps, as well as in the debates. Soludo has promised the people of Anambra State a different style and substance of governance. He has promised a government that will be attentive to creative ways of solving problems, to utilizing the best methods and technologies available in the world to the solution of problems that have been intractable in Anambra State, which in this case is a kind of microcosm of Nigeria. In today's episode, we're going to look at some of the promises that Soludo has made. We're going to look at some of the sort of differences of style that he has promised to bring in, including having an inauguration that will be very short on ceremony, on the pomp and pageantry that we usually associate with these events, but then emphasizing, just focusing on doing the people's work from the very opening whistle. Soludo has said that he would dispense with the big ceremonies, all the speechifying and so on, and that he wanted a short inauguration and that he will go to work the same day, March 17, and put in long hours to begin the work of moving Anambra State to a better place. So we'll look at this and we'll look at the consequences should Soludo fail to deliver on the big promises he's made. The consequences both for himself, politically, for the political party that he represents, as well as the broader class of educated, enlightened Nigerians who need to participate more in politics. And so everybody is looking at Soludo. If he becomes a roaring success, which is our expectation and our prayer, that would be wonderful across the board. But if he fails, if he disappoints, if he settles back to the usual business way of carrying on as other politicians, then it's going to be a disastrous day for any enlightened candidate, both in future in Anambra State as well as throughout the country. So I'd like to welcome you to this really exciting conversation in today's episode. Welcome.
All right. Here we go. So Yes. So, I mean, the big thing, obviously, is looking at it, I mean, the way people have looked at Anambra and the way you wrote about looking at Anambra as a beacon of possibilities for Nigeria, the big thing is now, you know, just like you said, is it going to be just business as usual in a different attire? Or is there going to be some level of substantive change? You know, are we going? Is it just going to be, well, inauguration is going to be less expensive, or is it going to be the sign of things to come?
Well, I guess the best answer is that it remains to be seen. All right, but clearly, Soludo has the educational credentials, okay? He's a man who has operated at the highest levels of the financial sector. He's been a professor in Nigeria and outside of Nigeria. He's been the governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria. And he's, by all accounts, a first-class scholar. So the question then is, and he chose to, as it were, promise intensely. Some people might say that he overpromised, okay? But I will say that he promised grandly, and my expectation is that he knows what it takes, and I believe that he knows what it takes. My hope is that he has the discipline, because that's really what it takes ultimately, the discipline to follow through and to be attentive to the granular details of statecraft. You know, what does it mean to be a leader? He has to be a leader. And part of it is actually, so there are cosmetic, there are, if you like, symbolic dimensions to being a good leader. So the fact that Soludo decided that he wanted to break with this tradition of aggrandizement and of pageantry and so on, and to have a stripped down, it's just bare essentials kind of inauguration. Let me just take the oath of office and I should go to work the same day for the people rather than say, okay, let's work tomorrow, which in many instances in Nigeria would then translate into, let's just party for one more week. You know, this is the week of our inauguration. Let's party for 1 week. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the 1 week, they say, oh, governor, you know, let's continue the party. You know, there are some of your, some of the stakeholders who have not celebrated. So they ultimately, governors then extend their self-aggrandizing celebration to a month. And before you know it, they've spent 4 years essentially treating themselves to parties. So I know a lot of my friends, okay, who are, you know, political figures in Nigeria and in Anambra State, are sort of a bit cynical about the Soludo model, what he's proposing to do. And so somebody called me and said, oh, you know, it's not just to do a quick inauguration, it's to stay the course. And well, Soludo, you've set yourself the challenge. Nobody put him to it. He decided that he wanted to do this. And, you know, I really, really want him to succeed because so much is riding on this. I know that in Nigeria, we tend to self-select for the least enlightened, least educated, the most rustic people. The most criminal elements become governors and presidents and senators and, you know, have all kinds of political office. And, you know, what they say is that, oh, yeah, even though we're corrupt, you know, there's a story. There's some years ago, a former governor in the Southeast that I've known from the 1980s, happened to come to America, was in DC, and met somebody who knows me. And so he got my number and he called me. And he said to me, "Ah, okay, I'm fighting to be the president, most serious Igbo man fighting to be the president of Nigeria, and you have not written anything in support of me." So I said to him, I said, "You know, I don't take you seriously." I told him, because I knew this guy when he was, a rogue element in society. You know, I never believed that anybody would allow this guy to be a governor. So here he is telling me he was serious to be president. So I said, "I don't take you seriously." And he says to me, "Do you think that I'm a Jaguda?" I said, "You are worse than Jaguda." And this guy, you know, he has a sense of humor. You know, we've been friends, right? So I could be, you know, open and blunt. So he said to me, "Well, you know, it's Jagudas who can run, in his word, who can rule Nigeria." So I said, "Okay, you fail it there, because I look at leaders, I don't look at rulers, right?" So he says to me, "Oh, we need Jagudas, you know, who go and fight, who are the kinds of people, if you get your Jebota people who speak grammar, you know, they will just flush them out of the place." But so it's a long way of saying that a lot rides on Soludo's success, okay? Because if he fails, he's going to energize the Jagudas to say, you know, so this, you can't get better than this man in terms of education, in terms of enlightenment, in terms of experience, in terms of being a man with a global consciousness. So if he fails, please, we don't want anybody to come tomorrow and say, "I have a PhD, I want to be governor. You guys go and sit down, write speeches for us, which we'll go and read. Let us go and continue the stealing thing." So my hope is that Soludo gets both the software, if you like, right, and also gets the hardware right.
Yeah. Well, look, man, there's just so much about that. So many angles in terms of, I know Soludo is looked at as an actual intellectual. Because if you're looking at it, first things first, almost all these governors have credentials that say they're intellectuals, and we could name them. Some of them have been, even Jonathan was a professor. I mean, we'd mentioned it before, and we would always mention it because, you know, that's a PhD holder in, I think, zoology or something. Governor of Cross River State was actually a professor within the state, current governor. The list is endless. When I just count in lawyers and social medical doctors and all those kind of things, we could run down a massive list of them. So there are a lot of them. It's just, I guess, with salute and financial professionals. I mean, we're talking of Peter Obi, who was looked at as a first-class financial professional. And some people feel that he did a great job, which is going to be, you know, something we're going to talk about now in terms of what a great job is, what is needed, what is really needed. Some people feel Peter Obi did a great job. Not from where I sit, did he, but some people feel that way. So it's looked at as Soludo is more of the poster child for a level of intellectualism, if I might put it that way. I won't disagree, although I do feel it's somewhat disingenuous to, based on the factors that it's kind of like, you know, there are a lot of people who are so-called intellectuals and all that, but I feel it's just more of a substantive, people look at him as somebody with substance. So does that substance carry over, like you said? And two, can a governor of a state like Anambra, can a governor in a state be actually transformational? I know people will point to Ebonyi or previous governor of Akwa Ibom, who to certain degrees have been effective. But at the end of the day, they've also still not, they also, based on the records, based on the reality, they didn't take off the Jagudaism or the Jagudaness that they had in terms of looting, being corrupt, and this thing. And I know our standards are the lowest, maybe even the lowest a human being possibly can aspire to as a populist. Like, well, he stole some money, but he did some work, is literally the standard, you know. But they you know, did that. So the question, the thoughts and the question is, how well can a governor, how effective can a governor be? You know, and how, what would be the bar, you know, for Soludo? What are the immediate problems? In Anambra, you know, what would be that bar? What would be the destiny? How would you see it, essentially?
Well, we could actually do like the whole hour on this question. So, as you rightly said, two issues before I get to what the bar, I think the bar should be. Two questions that you raised. One is the whole idea of how do we count people as educated and enlightened in Nigeria? The conventional thing is to just say somebody has a PhD. We have seen, or a master's degree or whatever, we have seen so many people with such degrees who have demonstrated very little enlightenment, okay? So for me, it's not it. What is important is to have the certificates, but then to have sort of the what undergirds it, you know, to be somebody who respects the mind, the life of the imagination. Because if you look at any great society, right? Great societies are always the product of the imagination. That's where it starts. And that's why our people unfortunately get it wrong. A lot of our people say, is it literature and philosophy you're going to read? It's in literature, or it's in philosophy, it's in the humanities that people begin to imagine a different, more deeply human society. And then once that society is conceived, they work towards its achievement. So that's one point that I wanted to make, that I don't consider people educated simply because they have degrees. You know, typically in Nigeria, you meet people, and when you greet them, they say, I'm Dr. So-and-so. And you say, what's your medical field? I say, I'm a doctor of philosophy or a doctor of sociology. And if you are really educated, you don't want to advertise you are a doctor or anything. It's in your exchanges with people that they come to know that you are a man of learning, right? And there are lots of people of learning who did not go to school. You know, one of my favorite examples is Mokugo Okoye, the late Mokugo Okoye. When you met the man, he was grounded in philosophy, was grounded in sociology, was grounded in anthropology, in history. He wrote poetry at an excellent level. He didn't have much of a formal education, but he wrote great, great books that were being studied in universities. But let me get to the second point, which is you talked about Peter Obi and so on, and how people say, yeah, Peter Obi did well. And, you know, that's an argument people make. And, you know, in the interests of full disclosure, Peter Obi and I are, in a sense, close friends, you know. And my mother adopted him as a son. So, you know, so when my mom died, it was his mother who died as well. So, but you know, but I was critical of his government, okay? Not that I don't recognize the achievements that people credit him with, but I expect a lot more of people. So when a governor in Nigeria says, I build roads, I say to them, building roads is not an achievement. And it really is annoying because in a sense, it's like governors in Nigeria have reduced themselves to that very low denominator. You know, oh, the governor is trying. You say, what is the governor? Oh, he's paying salaries and he builds roads, you know? And our people clap. And I say to them, you should be able to program a computer, something inanimate, really. And you program it, and every year it will tell you what roads to build. We shouldn't have a governor who is highly paid, who has all the perks and all these resources that come from his office, and all the governor does is to do substandard roads, okay, which are not maintained, you know. So one of the great problems in Anambra today is that the roads are in terrible shape, which you would not expect given that, you know, Ngige was praised for building roads, Peter Obi was praised for building roads, Obi Anọ in his first term at least was praised for building roads, but these roads are substandard. And then there are all kinds of other little details like the waterways, you know, the erosion control, the grassing of the sides of the roads and so on, which nobody pays attention to. And so you build a road, it just takes one half of a rainy season and the roads are washed off. And then when you tell the governor, they say, oh, I just built the roads. So it is not just building roads, it's also the culture of maintaining those roads. So let's get to what the big items are that Soludo must attend to. Key to anything that any society does is education. Education. And education is not simply teaching people to read and write. It is, in a sense, activating what the human being already has, the capacity for analyzing problems, coming up with solutions to those problems, and then implementing those solutions. That's what a good, sound educational system affords. In Nigeria, when you look at, in any state, and I'm not particularizing it this to Anambra State, you go to any state in Nigeria and you look at the schools, secondary schools, elementary schools, and you see where we put the young ones that we call the leaders of tomorrow, which has become a running joke because, you know, tomorrow never comes. And if tomorrow ever comes, the kids then find out that their lot is to be basically the crushed of tomorrow. They are never the leaders of tomorrow. So just looking at the environment itself, okay? Looking at the kind of all the deplorable situations that we have habituated ourselves to. Okay, where I went to a school that on one level looks impressive by Nigerian standards, and they had no toilets. So you build a school, a government in Nigeria builds a school, and when their teachers and the students need to pee or to defecate, they go to the bush. Okay? Already what you're doing is that you're reducing these students and teachers to animal level. It's animals who pee and defecate in the open. Human beings don't. Okay? So Soludo has to make an investment, a dramatic and substantial and long-term investment in education, the education of our children, so that people should be able to look at Anambra State and say, well, I don't have to fight to send my kids to private schools. The secondary schools, the schools in Anambra State, elementary, secondary, universities are well equipped to run, you know, for me to send my own kids to. So education is key. And part of education is that we have to make intellectual matters important again. Okay? I'll give you a story. Some years ago, I happened to be in Nigeria, and a friend of mine was close to a governor, and he said, oh, you know, the governor was reading your columns, you know, he heard you are in town, he wants to meet you. So, you know, I usually don't go to meet governors, but because I had stopped writing my column at the time, I said, okay, I can go meet him. So we got there, and the governor said, oh, you know, it's such a delight to meet you, you know, we always need help, advice from people like you. So I said to him, let me give you advice that I give to every important politician that I meet. I said, start a culture of reading. Okay? I said, your wife is the first lady of the state. Have your wife start a book club. Every month, your wife should choose one book, and she should invite all the men and women in the state to read the book along with her. And then she should choose a few people to sit down with her, perhaps get the local TV station to televise parts of them, of their gathering, as they discuss the book. And I said, maybe if you know, after a few months, you call one of the writers whose books have been chosen to come and give a talk to your wife and her group of readers. And I said, ask your commissioners to go to classrooms in your state and read a section of the book that has been chosen by your wife to students. Just start creating the culture that reading is important. Because when you talk to our people, they say, na book I go chop. And I tell them, yes, it is possible to chop books. In fact, that's one of the best things you can chop. Okay? If you're going to be an enlightened person in the modern society, rather than simply a consumer who will say, oh, what's that thing that is popular and fashionable in London? Buy it for me. You look like a village idiot. Okay? Okay. So that's the sort of thing. In Anambra State, so Peter Obi, for example, built a library in Awka, and he called it the ultra-modern e-library. And so one day I was in Awka and I was passing with a friend, and this friend pointed to a building and said, that's the library that Peter Obi built. And I looked, everywhere was bush, the grounds of the library, and the gates were shackled. Okay? And
this was in the daytime?
In the daytime. Hmm. So Jonathan had come to Anambra State, had read a speech opening this so-called library. There wasn't one newspaper in the library. There wasn't even a sheet of paper in the library, but they named it a library. So that just you put up a building and you said, this is a library. And people are clapping, and when it came time to talk about the governor's achievements, they will say, oh, he built a library. Mm-hmm. So our people think that a library is a building. So I wrote a column in those days where I criticized this. And I said, it's a library for snakes. And I said, because, you know, I mean, how does the president of the country come and inaugurate, formally launch a library? Then when he leaves, the place is, you know, shackled and padlocked.
But don't you feel that it's because the standard of society is just so low,
And that's the point that I'm making. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that, our people don't have that whole view of things. So somebody sits down and says, oh, it would be good to build a library. First of all, you and I live in America. Every small town has a library.
Mm-hmm.
Some towns have 2, 3, 5, 10 libraries, both public and private. Okay, so it's a scandal that in a governor's 8-year term, he built one library, and people name this as an achievement. And so we have to move away. And that's what, again, sort of the Soludo thing. So I don't want Soludo in his 100-day anniversary or one-year anniversary to ever sit down and say to me, I tarred the roads from Agolo to Newi. It's an insult. Road tarring should go without saying. Okay? And I had a small debate on the TV in London some years ago. I was in London being interviewed on Ben Television, and I was being critical of the Jonathan administration. Jonathan was in office then. And somebody called in, a Nigerian who lived in London. I said, oh, you have to be objective. You know, the man is, he's achieving something. I said, tell me his achievement. He said, he's building roads. So I said to the caller, you know, there's a call-in program. I said, you live in London, right? He said, yes. I said, have you ever heard the mayor of London or the British Prime Minister speak and say, my achievement is that I built roads? And he said to me, we can't compare ourselves to Britain. Rome was not built in a day. You know, that kind of woolly thinking, right? So I said to this caller, first of all, why shouldn't we compare Nigeria to Britain? Are you then saying that the white man is indeed superior to us? And if we agree that white people are superior, why are we independent? Why don't we call Britain to send people to come and govern us? Do you understand? So I said to him, I said, at any rate, the Nigerian president, in his allowances, in his salary, in the security vote that he controls, makes several times the annual salary of the British Prime Minister. Every month, every Nigerian governor in Nigeria, every month has more in security vote that they control, more than the annual salary of the U.S. president. Think about that. And a lot of governors pocket that money. And yet they're not satisfied. They pocket that money, or most of it, and they find other monies to steal. And yet when you then say, let's compare Nigeria to Dubai, let's compare Nigeria to Britain, they say, no, you can't do that. I said, then why are we paying them as if they are superstars? So we pay governors and presidents in Nigeria scandalously high salaries and so on, and allow them to steal more, right? So I said to this guy finally, who called me from London, I said, first of all, if we should compare the Nigerian leader to the leaders of Sweden, to the leaders of France, to the leaders of Britain, to the leaders in America, and if we agree that our leaders are not as good, please let us go and recruit the leaders who are good in those countries to come and run. Because, you know, Nigerians deserve, we have the money, is much of it.
We have the potential.
We got the potential. But, of course, I don't believe that the white Europeans, Caucasians are superior, you know. I don't believe in that at all. I believe in the intellectual equality, in the moral equality, in the shared acumen of every human group, right? So what we have to do simply is to begin to hold our leaders to account. So one of the things that I want to see from Soludo to really set himself apart, accountability. Okay? Let the people of Anambra State know every month how much money comes into the state, where it came from, and how that money is spent. Okay? Mm-hmm. Where it goes. If any leader begins to do that, so you see, I don't talk about things like building roads. That's stupid. That should go without saying. Roads should be built. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it's like you're a father. Mm-hmm. I'm a father. It's like if somebody says to me, what's your achievement as a father? I say, okay, I make sure that my children eat. Okay? you're an idiot. Do you understand? Because, you know, I mean, if you're a father and you have a little bit of money, and all you do is you go to a restaurant and you blow that money, and you come home and your children are looking at you hungry and you're looking at them. You know, then you're not a father. You should be in jail or something, right? So the same way, really. If you tell me, oh, since this governor came, salaries are paid on the 26th. Every 26th, they pay salaries. And our people actually, it's the scandal of low expectations.
Yeah.
We have reduced ourselves today. So Soludo, if he wants to set himself apart, create an environment where the best. And so he's done something really promising, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, people are critical of it. I'm not. I don't think it's been done anywhere in the world that you say to potential office holders, I want you to apply for political jobs. Write an application, tell me of your qualifications, tell me of what you can bring to the transformation of Anambra State. Sort of, there's something Kennedy-esque about it. You know, it's like how President Kennedy said to Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. So Soludo has said to the people of Anambra State, and indeed I hear that he's opened it up to other Nigerians, come tell me what you can do for Anambra State to make it great. That is wonderful. And so in a lot of ways then, what he's doing is he's saying, I'm not going to appoint people based on the usual, I know Chief Sosa and so on, and he sent me his son to make his son Commissioner of Finance, right? Mm-hmm. So Ludo says, I want a Commissioner of Finance who can actually write me a proposal for how he's going to increase revenues in Anambra State and then invest that revenues revenues in ways that would really have an impact on the broad section of society. That's wonderful. But if he doesn't hold faithfully to that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if people write fantastic proposals and then Soludo goes nepotistic and chooses wishy-washy, third-rate mediocrities to run his government, then he, you know, people will mock him, you know. So in a lot of ways, so education, set a different moral tone in the country. Make sure that you don't self-aggrandize, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Think of things like your convoy. Recognize that you are governing a space where people are poor. When you go to places, go in two cars, at most three. Have one police vehicle in front, be in the middle, have another police vehicle behind you. Don't go in a convoy of 10, much less 20 or 30 cars, okay? Have your first lady be the most wonderful first lady in history by being quiet. Let her get out of the limelight, except on occasions when she is promoting, championing causes that everybody would agree are worthy of promotion and championing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea where a first lady comes out and people call her mommy, you know, and then commissioners have to go and bow to your wife and so on as a governor. So there are all these, again, little things, and those are the things that I'm focusing on because those are important. If the governor would say, for example, I'll give you another example. I went to see a relative who is a politician some years ago. He gave me an appointment to come to his office, and I went to see him at 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him until 4. The only reason I stayed, because I don't stay. If you keep me late for 5 minutes, I leave. The only reason I stayed was that One of his appointees was a friend of mine for decades. So I was in the guy's office just talking.
Yeah.
But what this man told me was that, oh, you know, there's this traditional ruler that he was not expecting. The traditional ruler just walked in, and you can't tell them not to come. We should begin to change our societies. You should tell people the governor is busy, or the minister. If you want to see me, call. I want to see you, of course. But call my protocol office and make an appointment. And if I tell you to come at 4 p.m., you better come at 4 because I've scheduled somebody for 4:30. Okay? So if somebody, a traditional ruler, comes, you've given him appointment for 4 p.m., he comes at 4:30, you don't, as the governor, you don't even talk to him. Your protocol people will meet him and say, Your Royal Highness, we're sorry. This is now 4:35. The governor has another meeting with somebody. He's in that meeting. And no, he can't see you at 5. Okay? Mm. So go back, call us, and make another appointment. So those little things.
Yeah.
People will call you arrogant. Soludo has a reputation as arrogant. But sometimes arrogance is good. Okay? In that case. If you are being arrogant by insisting that people do the right thing. So these are some of the ways Anambra State has centers like Newi, like Onitsha, that can sustain a kind of cottage industrialization. All they need is to clean up the space, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And set up the basic infrastructure, make arrangements for water, make arrangements for power. Independent power plants will be important. Power is key to industrialization anywhere. So Soludo should, he doesn't have enough time, even if he has a second term, to complete all these tasks. But if he starts, then people will see that leadership can actually be transformative, and people will no longer settle for the kind of milisiji, as they say, small.
That's the baba of them all. Yeah. All right. Yep. I mean, that was a long list of idealistic things in some ways that you feel. You didn't mention security. I think security is, in fact, for me, I think the two major things anybody can do in Nigeria, or try to do in Nigeria, to stimulate growth and economy. You mentioned education is one of the big ones, but I think the two major ones for me is always security and ease of doing business, meaning red tape. When I say red tape, Nigeria is in a whole category of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Talking of all kinds of agencies, all kinds of people coming in. It's if you haven't spoken to people doing business in Nigeria about how much they get harassed and taxed,
mm-hmm.
I mean it's a whole 15 novel series to start with, man. But I mean, you talk about all these things about how going in and getting qualified people is not that. I feel like the other people who have been qualified, who have held political office, not just governorship and this, that we talked about Peter Obi, the other people who have also been, but the system itself is something that is an inhibitor to excellence.
Yeah,
like you said, you're talking about you give the example of the person you went to see who delayed you because some traditional ruler just breezed in and set in the standards that these things don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's easier said than done. I agree with you on that point that people should, but I think it's just in another way, in the other side of the coin, it's I don't know if it's possible, because in some cases that would literally end your career. Imagine if a Obi of Onitsha comes to your office that you have to tell him to, he doesn't take it well and goes, you know, those kind of individuals.
So. Well, I tell you something. The societies that run well, okay, have basic rules that have earned the consent collective consent of everybody. Okay? Trust me, if you spell out the rules, okay, and you say to people, you explain it to people, okay, so you don't come across as arrogant. You explain to people, I want to deliver. There's a lot of work to do in my state, in the country, and I want to deliver for the people. Okay? So in order to deliver for the people, I want everybody's cooperation. I'm not isolating myself from people. I want to meet people, big and small, but I need time because governance, you know, I mean, one of the things that distinguishes great leaders, if you look at around the world, you know, Obama, for example, every year he issues a list of his favorite books and people look forward to it. Okay. Bill Clinton, when he was president, read. Okay. So informed leaders have to have time to space really to think. Again, I would suggest that most of what a leader does is to imagine a better place for his people. So to think. In order to think, you need that solitude, okay? You need to remove yourself from this constant stimulation of society, people being around you, going from a wedding to somebody's funeral to somebody's child naming ceremony to somebody's chieftaincy taking titles and so on. A leader, you know, part of what it means is to discipline yourself, okay, and say, I'm one of, 0.0001 in all of history set out to be a governor or a president. So you explain it to people. For me to be able to deliver, I need to manage my time well. I want to see you. So if you're a big traditional ruler and you want to see me, all you need to do is to call my protocol people. They will find a time that is convenient between you seeing the governor and the governor. If it is an emergency and you the governor can't fit you in, there's social communication, there's the phone. You call the governor on the phone, you discuss the matter. But don't just be a traditional ruler and you are driving to Enugu from Abagana and you are passing government house and you say to the driver, hey, drive in, let's see if we can see the governor.
But you know that's what's going to happen though. Huh? You know that's what happens.
Yeah,
though.
But the thing is, what I'm saying is that a good leader should say to people, announce it beforehand, please, I need time to plan my day. A leader actually who just sees everybody who struggles in says, I don't take leadership seriously. You shouldn't have that time. You can't go unless you are scheduled to see the French president or Biden. However important you are, unless it's a critical global crisis, you can't just go and call. You can't even call and see Biden in the next few months or something. He is busy. He's been scheduled.
Actually, his calendar is actually accessible. It's online.
Precisely.
You could go in and see his calendar.
And you see what he's doing
for the day. Yeah.
They understand. And that's the kind of, when I don't talk about building roads, again, it's because I take building roads. What I tell my students, I say, if something goes without saying, don't say it. Okay? So for me, a governor building roads goes without saying. So I'm not going to say a governor should build roads. Nor should I accept that when the governor builds roads, it's an achievement. Please get that out of my face. A governor paying salaries should go without saying. Don't come and tell me that this governor pays salaries every 20-something of the month. Civil servants get their salaries. Teachers get their salaries. Before uncle, as I say, you know, should it be any other way? So it goes without saying that governors should do a certain basic things. But the point you made, to create the environment, not necessarily to invest in creating industries and so on, but to look at the laws. If somebody wants to set up a business in Anambra State, how easy would that be? If it is not busy, if it is not easy enough, the governor should make it easy for people to bring in their resources, right? And should appoint servants, civil servants, who are responsive. So anyway, it's going to be difficult. But I tell you something, right? People say, oh, if you do certain things, you won't win a second term. That's another sort of conventional, I think, misconception that, you know, Nigerians don't challenge. I think that if you are a leader, if you come to office and you decide that I'm going to be transformative, all right, and then you begin to create change in society. So a governor needs to create an environment that will draw investment, both domestically and from good investment from abroad. It needs to secure the space that there is safety. When people feel that crimes are low and that you have the infrastructure to identify, arrest and punish criminals, then people are confident. If they think that the environment is unsafe, it's unpredictable, then nobody wants to come in. So it's going to be basically 4 wasted years.
Yeah. I mean, that is. So what would you say is the, what you like? I'll give this thought in a question. Like we talked about, I don't know if we spoke about on this thing, but in terms of the airports, there's an airport in Anambra, and it feels like a duplication of need when there's an airport in Asaba already, and there's an airport in Enugu. And it's not like air travel is growing in Nigeria. In fact, they just jacked up the prices the other day. So, you know, what do you think? What do you think would be some of the biggest needs outside of what we, you know, security, education, security, improving ease of doing business, especially as it suits a large portion of the population in Anambra who are by and large business people, you know, large amount of this thing that drives the state is actually business. So, what do you think would be the big issues that is needed in that state? In terms of, I mean, we talked about etiquette and changing the tone, setting the tone, a different tone. But maybe in terms of like a project that they could undertake, not doing roads. Doing roads should be standard. Maybe they should have an expo. I actually think they should have an international expo there or something. Well, but they would need to dredge the River Niger or something like that to get that done. So
yeah. Well, first of all, food security is a big issue in the world. All right, and we're seeing it today. You know, prices are going through the roof in America. It's worse in Nigeria. And if people don't find food to eat, or if there's food but people can't afford it, then all bets are off. It doesn't matter the kind of moral tone that you have created in a society. Human beings have certain basic needs. And the most important is that people have to be able to eat and to be nourished, okay? First in their bodies before you talk about moral and intellectual nourishment. So Anambra State has baskets within the state that are, you know, that historically produce a lot of food. So the government, one of the investments that the government should do is encourage the processing of food and create, you know, so talking about road construction, for me, it's really not road construction as much as it is to create new channels of movement of goods and services within the states, of people, goods and services, right? And this could be electronic forms of movement. It could be rail movement. It could be just the vehicular movement. But there are places that produce food that are waterlogged. And so they are, in a sense, what they produce, a lot of it gets lost, again, because we don't have processing and so on. So Anambra State is a state that can benefit from doing a lot of investment. And when I say investment, I don't mean for the state government to build these things, because our experience is that when Nigerian governments build things, they typically then put in their cronies to run those institutions. And then they even entities that should be profitable are then gutted because the people who have been appointed see it as the governor put me here to chop. Okay? And so they take the resources, the state keeps voting money, and after a while, everybody abandons the whole thing. It is create a safe, secure environment, educate young men and women so that they can be conscientious workers for investors, you know, instead of stealing the resources or just coming there and sitting down and just hoping to collect your salary for being sinecures and so on. So, so I would say that securing the food security and viability of the state, addressing environmental questions. You know, Anambra State has a huge erosion crisis. Gullies are all over the place, taking down houses, washing off communities. And in terms of land space, Anambra State has a relatively small land space, so we can't afford this menace of erosion to continue to grow. So the state government has to come up with effective, but you know, relatively inexpensive solutions, you know, to these crises that would secure the buy-in of the communities themselves. Okay, and you and I know that there is nothing called trash disposal in Nigeria, right?
Yep.
So when people drink what they call pure water, they just throw, you know, the plastic on the ground. When people need to go to toilet, they just run into the bush, you know. So I remember going to a town a few years ago, and somebody from the town said, let's go and see the stream where he used to fetch water as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were going to the stream, you know, people had defecated all over the place, you know, and then there's trash, mounds of trash everywhere. So you can actually turn these things into energy. You can actually have innovative solutions, but it takes a government that allows itself the space to think, that brings in partners who come in with real solutions rather than partners who just say, give me a contract to buy 10 official cars of the government. Okay? You bring in people who have come up with solutions for real problems. Power is central. Power is central. I think that just the other day I read that Professor Bahati Naji, his geometric power has settled a long running legal battle with I think a Mekofor's company. And so because geometric power had built an independent power station that would provide regular uninterrupted power for Aba, there should be such an arrangement for Onitsha, for Newi, which are the commercial and the industrial hubs of Anambra respectively, right? And then for Awka and its capital territory as a capital political center, and then ultimately all of Anambra. And Anambra is relatively small, that you can actually build an independent power plant that can give regular power all over Anambra State. Once you solve that power problem and you solve the security problem. The thing is that Nigerians are such an inventive and creative people that they can actually create the wealth in amazing ways.
It sounds real good. Well, I guess we talked about a bunch of those issues. So in terms of what's expected, what the bar might be, and you know, more importantly, where you know, you said it's a parable for Nigeria, where maybe somebody some way, because can be everything we expect in a government in Nigeria, and that might be a way of revitalizing the population to get more in tuned, more educated in terms of what they should be demanding things from their elected representatives, or their representatives, I don't know if they're elected or not, but their representatives. But yeah, that might be, because no matter how you choose and pick, whether it was Donald Duke and tourism in Cross River, or Fabio in listing some infrastructure and some distant, they would excel in certain areas. Peter Obi in, you know, I think it's what they call this person in a Boeing state that is doing a lot of infrastructure as well. Mm-hmm. They would generally excel in certain areas and then fill in most of the critical areas in terms of corruption and, mm-hmm. and you know, creating a real framework that even in some cases, not long after these governors have left, most of these things are nowhere to be found. Tinapia was a big thing when Donald Duke was there, but it's still a thing, but it's not the thing that it's not, it wasn't built to move into the future. Unless some other person comes up and decides to dust it up. But you know, the way things are, there's a lot of self-aggrandized individuals that end up in these positions. So when they get there, they have got no interest in continuing with what their predecessor. There's no continuation. And in some cases, that might also be the reason why some of these things have collapsed. And if you look at specific cases, but overall we're looking at a situation where Anambra might be the beginning of, especially as we head into 2023 and the possibilities out there of people trying to gather steam as opposed to those people who have just been there, who are experienced at doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
you know, I mean, and that's, you just mentioned another reason why it is absolutely important that Soludo succeed.
Yeah.
2023. We did a podcast, we did an episode on the debate in Anambra State, and that was a turning point. You know, people saw on the stage three candidates, Soludo, Ozibo, and Andy Oba. And there was just natural separation, you know. So Soludo separated himself, showed he was stellar. Ozibo was close. And Andy Oba shouldn't have been on the stage, you know. And I think that that was key in ensuring that somebody like Andy Oba lost in his own local government. So people, you know, because we have this whole thing. Yes, Nigerians can be maddening in their acceptance of mediocrity in government, in their low expectations for those in office. But that is also born of experience. You know, Nigerians used to expect much. You know, I remember, you know, when independence came, my father was telling me they actually thought that Nigeria was going to surpass Britain. You know, my parents believed in their capacity. You know, once we chase away the white people, we're going to surpass, you know, these people. And we had that capacity. You know, we had that potential to do it. But then we had leaders who lacked imagination, and we have continued to allow in office, not necessarily elect, because a lot of the people who have hold political office in Nigeria are rigged in. They're not chosen by the people, but some of them are chosen by the people, and we have to become attentive to to get the small things right, okay? Because as I said, if Soludo, you can normalize abnormality. This is a phrase that Ngugi Wa Thiong'o uses. Mm-hmm. He says a lot of things are abnormal, are normalized abnormalities, okay? So that's what's happening in Nigeria. So in any serious space, you can't just badge on the governor and expect to be received. But in Nigeria, people think I'm important, so the governor has no choice but to receive me. But the governor can say, hey, let's begin to act at the rest of the civilized world, okay? And it's not civilized white people. It's also civilized, enlightened black nations and black people, right? That's why, as I said, when I have an appointment with somebody, if you are late for more than 5 minutes and you haven't called me to explain why you're late, it doesn't matter whether you are the big billionaire. I have enough self-respect for myself that I leave. I just leave, okay? And it's my way of saying my time is important. And if my time is not important to you, or if I'm not important enough for you to keep to the time, you know, I remember some years ago, I was the founding editor of a magazine that I published with Barton Nagy, Professor Barton Nagy. Mm-hmm. And the governor of Enugu State at the time was supposed to be the chief guest of honor at the launch of the magazine, the official presentation mm-hmm. in Nigeria. The event was to start about 1:30. The governor didn't come until 4 p.m. And there were a cross-section of Nigerians and the European community, some Americans in the diplomatic community were there. And when the governor finally arrived, he showed up and people went and crowded his car. And he came out and started talking to the people. Hey, how are you? Hey, well, we are, you know, as if he had come early. You've kept people waiting for not 5 minutes, not 10 minutes, not even 1 hour, for almost 3 hours. And you show up and you start talking like, oh, I'm the governor, they can wait. And I was so angry, I was supposed to introduce him. I went and told the MC, I'm not going to introduce this idiot, you know, because I just said, no, I can't do it. Do you understand? I was so angry. I'm not going to say, yeah, you know, ladies and gentlemen, our big man has come. No, I said, nope, I have respect for myself. And for me, the governor disrespected himself, you know. Same thing, some in 2010 or 2011, I was a coordinator of the Achebe Colloquium at Brown University.
Mm-hmm.
The then Nigerian ambassador was invited to speak, give the opening speech for 15 minutes, okay? This man came 40 minutes late. So I actually went and said to Achebe and to the president of Brown University, we're gonna start without him. And they said, sure. So I got to the stage to start. And the man strolled into the office, you know, the late Professor Adefuye. And he and I became friends because I actually told him that I was very upset at his conduct. So he came in and I conferred with Achebe and I went to him. I said, okay, you were supposed to speak for 15 minutes. I said, I give you now 3 minutes to go, expecting that he will apologize for being late. Then come down. I said 3 minutes. I don't mean 3 and a half, 3 minutes. So he got up there and started speaking. Oh, we all love Achebe and so on. Then it got to 2 minutes. So I said to him, I stood in front of him. I said, you have 1 more minute. And he started bringing out his speech. So I came and stood in front of his podium. And I said to him, Ambassador, if you read 1 word from that, I'm going to come up to the stage and we'll start a fight. So he kept saying to me, okay, I'll read it quickly. I said, you're not to read. I said, you have to come down now. I said, don't read 1 word, Ambassador. So after a while, I wasn't moving. So I said, okay, Ndibe doesn't want me to read. And he got down. So during a break, he said to me, okay, you were unfair to me. I said, Ambassador, I asked you to go there so that you would have the opportunity to apologize to people. You went, you didn't apologize. You started talking about, oh, we all love Achebe and so on. I said, the first thing you should do when you are late, if you take time seriously, is apologize to people. Okay? He and I became friends. We became friends. But it started with that fight. So, and that's what I, you know, so for me, if, you know, occasionally Nigerians invite me to give talks, and I tell them, I said, if you want me to start this talk at 1 p.m., I'm there at 1 p.m., but you better start at 1. Yeah, I can make an allowance for 5-10 minutes. But one of those things where they start say 1, at 1, nobody has come. And so they say, they will come from 2. I say, okay, so at 2, let somebody else speak because I'm not here. I've voted time to speak to you from 1 to maybe be with you till 2 p.m. If it is starting at 2, I don't have that time, and I move on.
Yeah, that's a good lesson. So, that's what we should ease out of the podcast today. I don't know if you have any final things to add. But.
Well, Soludo has a choice. The choice that we hope he takes is to live up to the commitment that he made to be an extraordinary governor. We think that he has everything that he takes, and he has the goodwill of the people to do it. So